Welcome to Piercing the Veil on BBSRadio.com, a show for truth seekers and rebels. Join us every week as we obliterate willful ignorance, corruption, globalist agendas, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 5 p.m. Central, 3 p.m. Pacific, and listen carefully as we provide crucial solutions, information awareness, and unique life hacks to improve our planet. Pierce the veil, and the truth will reveal itself.
Greetings, greetings, good afternoon. This is Piercing the Veil. I'm Corey Stevens. I'm standing in for Jordan. Jordan's off handling some other business today. We had a rerun last week. We're just going to kind of have an open show today. We'll call it a Sunday ramble. And maybe we'll just do this more regularly. Sunday ramble. We got a guest host, Amy Toulos is here. Amy, are you there with us?
Yes, sir. Hello.
All right. How's it going, Amy?
It's going marvelously.
Excellent. Excellent. So we've got, I'm going to give out anyone who wants to call in. There's a toll-free number, station 2 at BBS Radio. The toll-free number is 888-429-5471, and the direct number is 323-744-4841. And by all means, anyone who wants to call in and comment on what we happen to be rambling about, or to just ask questions or put forth a subject, feel free to do so. Amy, what's going on with you? You down in, where are you at, Texas?
Yes.
All right.
Texas.
Okay. What's been going on? Oh, it's Memorial Day today. We're supposed to be, drinking alcohol and eating barbecue. And memorializing the war dead, I guess. Maybe not necessarily in that particular order.
But what a holiday.
Well, in theory, it would make sense to memorialize people who have fought and died for your benefit, I think, in theory. But we all know that war is a racket, so it's like another holiday for people to go out and spend money, I guess, for the most part. I don't know. It's kind of harsh not to demean anyone who's been at war and who's died at war and people who have lost loved ones and so on and so forth. It's kind of, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it, but what do you think?
I agree with you. My brother was in the army, so it's kind of close to my heart to memorialize the ones that are out there fighting for freedom, quote unquote, and the ones that have passed. But I, saying that, I do believe that war is engineered. All wars are engineered.
Yeah, that's the problem that I have. Yes, I would be more than willing to honor anyone who laid down their life for me. I just don't think there's much. I don't think there's a lot of justification for the warfare that's happened in recent history.
No.
And I think it's unfortunate. I kind of have this sense, particularly after the Gulf War and stuff like that, you know, men and women who went over to Iraq or Afghanistan. I know there's a lot of veterans coming back who have a different view of the war machine and their participation in it and what it's all about stuff. More so, you know, different than when they went in.
Yeah.
Perhaps they bought the, you know, they bought into the propaganda of it going in, and then probably saw something different while they were there. And there's a lot of veterans who are coming out recently, and on the side of war is a racket.
Mm. It's just all a big loosh fest. They're just
right.
The energy suckers. They use our governments to make these wars, and they just feed off of all the death and the fear and the excitement that's caused over it.
Right. Right. Yeah. There's multiple levels. There's the giant blood sacrifice, the ongoing blood sacrifice, human sacrifice.
Yeah.
And whatever, you know, whatever the mechanisms of that are, I'm sure Jordan would be able to fill in a lot more detail on that. But as you say, yeah, there seems to be entities or consciousnesses out there that thrive off of the bloodletting, human sacrifice in particular. But we see it in Islam. We see it in Judaism, the sacrificing of lambs and things like that. The sacrificing of animals, the spilling of blood to appease these gods, if you will, or these beings, so that we may curry favor in them, right? Lots of examples of human sacrifice, right? It's interesting. They talk about the Mayans and the Aztecs and things, right?
Yeah.
And they'll talk about, some people will say how barbaric they were with their blood sacrifice. And yet, if you put it to them that war in all circumstances, really, at least in modern times, is kind of just that, seems to me. And that the pretense for war, particularly since 9/11, and since the internet age in particular, where people have more access to information and so forth, seems to me that you can see a lot the motivations and the causes of war are a lot more transparent than they once were at one time.
Yeah, especially when you wake up. And then the question comes to, what can we do about it? Like, I'm sitting here on my computer. What can I as an individual do to help change this energetic field of horribleness? And what comes to my mind is just meditation and putting out that intent whenever you sit down or whatever you do to meditate. And just imagine yourself as a light being, like a light beam, and kind of, what's that word? It goes into itself and comes out the other end, and it's just a torus. You imagine a torus of energy just healing the earth. And that's what I do.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're powerful beings. More so than we realize. And I would say, all right, typically, historically, wars are between, families, right? The Hatfields and the McCoys, as an example.
Yes.
They're tribes, wars between tribes, wars between nations, nation states, wars between corporate entities or what have you. But ostensibly, the way I look at it, the best way that I can effectuate a change in that dynamic, meaning somehow lessening the tendency towards warfare, is one, to start with myself, right?
Yeah.
In my experience and my observations, everyone has a war going on inside them, in a way. Right, we have our good, our what could be called positive attributes or negative attributes, and if they're not in balance, then they're at odds with each other. And so maybe we start with ourselves. We start with ceasing being warlike against the various parts of ourselves and look to kind of harmonize all of these aspects. Then when you do that, then you'll have less of a tendency to be warlike with other human beings that you come in contact with on one's daily life. And I think that would be the next step. If people are more or less warlike or more positive, more harmonious in their relationships with other individuals, mm-hmm. I think that would undermine the group warfare dynamic, right? As it pertains to, right, groups, ideologies, nations, and so forth. You know, one sure way to not go to war is to not join the military.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably a good, you know, that's probably a good thing. But then again, on the other hand, it's there is a matter of real self-defense. And that's where we get to how much of a distortion it seems to me, a distortion of reality that the wars of at least of the recent past have been. How many of them have really been about self-defense? How many times has the United States, you know, in the Middle East or in Vietnam or in North or in Korea or in World War II, right? How much of that was really about America being under attack, per se, as opposed to American interests?
Yeah. I would go so far to say it's less than 10%. The other 90% would be for money, wealth, creation.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, who is it? I forgot his name. There was an admiral, I believe. I think he participated. It was either World War II or Korea or Vietnam. I'm not sure. Anyway, this guy wrote a pamphlet or a letter called War is a Racket from his experience. He's an insider. He was a top level. You know, he's an admiral in the Navy, in the Navy, I believe. And I may be mistaken. War is a Racket is definitely the name of the article in case anyone wants to look into it. But he very eloquently outlines a lot of what it's actually about, right? I mean, regardless of the causes of warfare, in order to go to war, you got two groups going to war. They each have to spend money on armaments, right? Most of them are not going to, most of these entities don't have the cash, so they got to borrow money from central banks. So either side of that conflict, you have the entities borrowing funds to arm up. And we know that the bankers kind of fund both sides regardless. And then you have a bunch of those armaments are used and have to be replaced. That's good for the defense contractors and the and so forth. And where they're used, inevitably there's destruction. So whatever the outcome of the war is, somebody is going to have to tap some central banks for funds to be able to rebuild what was destroyed. So again, whoever wins or loses, it doesn't really matter. If you're in the middle funding either side, you're the one who's got to get paid back.
Yes.
After the whole thing is over. So yes, there's the money side. There's the more energetic side of the of the blood sacrifice, and as you mentioned, just the energetics, the fear, the adrenaline, right? The entities, if you will, that feed off of that kind of energy that's put out by human beings.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard said that that's perhaps one of the reasons for these very large scale, like sporting events and concerts and things like that, where everyone in the crowd's getting all fired up, and that there's an energy field created there. There's an energy output by the combined energies of the people in those situations.
Yeah.
And that something is out there feeding off of it.
Yeah. Just like how we can put our intention into anything, like a bowl of food, you can intend it to heal your body.
Mm.
I feel like the orchestrators of big events, like the Super Bowl, put their own intent behind it that all the partakers in are unaware of. And because they're unaware, they get sucked off of.
Mm-hmm.
So just being aware of the feeding that's going on is one step, I believe. And then the second step would be always to protect yourself, like that self-protection of the energy field around you.
Sure. And it's like, I don't know would it be reptilians? Who are these purported entities that are feeding off of mankind's fear and duress?
The first thing that comes to my mind would be, yeah, the reptilians, but there's some other, there's more.
Yeah, I mean, whatever they are, and even, you know, even if I'm sure that there are, and I know that there are many people who go way deep on these subjects, but I would even say fear is an energy drain, right? You don't even need to concern yourself necessarily with where that energy is draining to. It's probably, for me, it's just enough for me to know and to experience that fear is a net negative for me, right? Mm-hmm. It's an energy drain. And so for that reason alone, it's good enough for me to say, well, I would do well to be able to monitor and modify the conditions in my life so that I'm not operating out of fear. Right? We know there's a lot of depression in the world right now, right? Particularly in the West. There's like a, you know, like a an epidemic of depression.
Yeah.
Right? But my understanding of depression is that it's the body's way of actually dealing with anxiety.
Mm.
You know, I'm not sure of this, but this is what I've heard, and it makes sense to me that the body kicks into a depression in order to offset some anxiety, right? So if you're stressed out, depression is almost like a natural counter effect to anxiety. And we know that anxiety and stress, it heightens the adrenaline. I think in the West, for the most part, most people in America and in Europe are adrenaline junkies somehow. They live a kind of a high stress life, right? Keeping up with the Joneses and the mental processes that we go through, and anxiety and fear. For any number of reasons, and that kicks up the adrenaline. It causes a kind of a chronic heightened state. kicking up adrenaline in the body is not so good because it's only supposed to, we're only supposed to use that in emergency to get us out of a tight situation, right? Adrenaline kicks in and you run and you jump and you avoid pain or injury, and then it's over. But then you have this, if you have a chronic sort of pumping of adrenaline into your system, that causes all kinds of adverse reactions in the biochemistry of the body, the creation of cortisols in the body, which are destructive to tissues and the bones and so forth, and normal functioning of the body. So the best way to, I guess, to deal with war is to deal with the war in ourselves, and to deal with any warlike tendencies towards other individuals around us. I think if everybody did that, then the institutions that we create and that we participate in would only have to follow suit, I would think.
Mm. Well, something interesting happened to Jordan and I last night.
Yeah, what was that?
Well, we were outside. It was just a clear night. And the light, or the sky, was like pulsing with light. It was like hitting the stratosphere or something. And the whole light of the sky would light up. And really? Then in the distance, we saw like really quick lightning, but it was red. Wow. And then it was just really unusual. So I'm a skeptical person, so I looked it up. And apparently it's supposed to be caused by some nitrogen fusion kind of thing in the air. But sometimes you just know. Your intuition kicks in and you're like, that doesn't make sense. Something else is going on here. And that's what I got the feeling of last night. Have you ever experienced something like that? Weird in the night sky?
I was out walking and, you know, I'm down in Arizona. And often I wonder, wow, I've been here a long time. I haven't seen any UFOs yet. And which to me is kind of strange, because apparently there seems to be more activity in certain places, Arizona, I guess, being one of them. And it was about a month ago. I was just out with a walk, out on a walk with my lady, and both of us simultaneously, right out of the corner of our eye, in the western horizon, it was dusk, so starting to get dark, and we saw like a group of lights, like a group of three and a group of four, so seven altogether. And we just kind of, both of us just saw it out of the corner of our eye, and was able to look over just as they kind of disappeared. But it was like they were kind of streaking across the horizon, and then they just disappeared. And I'm like, okay, you know, there's military bases out here. I know, you know, with jets fly overhead all the time, F-16s and the tank busters. I forgot what they're called. But you know, there's military planes flying all around and so forth. And I'm like, that was no military plane. You know, that was not a plane. Because I've never seen them fly in formation like that. It was too fast. It was too quick. There was no sound. You know, we see shooting stars and stuff all the time out here, and that was not it. You don't see seven shooting stars in formation going horizontal across the horizon, you know? So we just kind of looked at each other and was like, well, that was interesting, and just kept, you know, and just kept on doing our thing, you know? Because, I mean, look, in this day and time, anything is possible, you know?
Yes.
As much as we talk about stuff on this show, and we have access to a lot of information, we give a lot of information. I got a, you know, Jordan is up on a lot of stuff. I'm up on a lot of stuff. But I always ultimately find myself humbled. I always find myself humbled, and because like I realize how much I don't know. All right, and so I believe we got a call from Michael on line one. Yeah. Michael.
Yes.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, and you're very right with what you say. Constantly figuring out and relearning how much we don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, just quickly, I knew from a very early age that, you know, appearance versus reality, okay, how things are appeared or were conveyed or portrayed in the world around me didn't match up to reality. And just last week, I had a conversation with my mom, and for example, and she asked me, do you remember that time when you were about 8 years old? You asked me one day, you said, Mom, what if the trucks don't come to town? What happens then? And I was like, wow. Yeah. So I've been on this for a long time. And so I've been a seeker. I've been a searcher for a long time. I've gone down a lot of rabbit holes. I've accessed a lot of information. And I recall at around 2007, I was deep into the internet. I would be on the web for like days at a time. And I was getting to the point where the information that I was privy to and that I was receiving and trying to process was just overwhelming. And I started freaking out a little bit. And it's funny because I run into people who are in that position on a regular basis where there's all of this, you know, I guess you can call it, they're getting red pilled, right? Mm. And they're just trying to process all of this information and they're starting to freak out, you know? And I'm like, look, the fact that you're going down this road, there's not a lot of people going down this road, but there are more and more people going down this road. So you're not alone. But just stay focused on the things that are important to you in life. Don't freak out. Don't panic. Like they say, the number in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You know, the number one rule for navigating the universe is don't panic.
And always know where your towel is.
Always know where your towel is. Yeah, but Michael, man, what's you feeling like? What's going on with you?
I'm doing pretty good. I remember when I did that over-searched the internet and just searching for like meaning and like new answers and just getting to the point where I searched so much to where you find answers that are actually contradicting each other at some point.
Sure. Sure.
And it's confusing what all that means. But what it really is that reality is very subjective. That there's realities that we're creating that aren't necessarily real, but they have become real because so many people are putting energy towards that.
I feel like there's something to that. You know, the more that I think about it, it seems to me that human beings or human attention combined with intention is a most potent force on the earth. And, you know, I think it's great that people are seeking the truth. I think it's great that, we're in a time where there's no secrets anymore, and that's even been prophesied in various books and in various cultures that, you know, there's no more secrets anymore. And but, you know, it's almost it's information overload. It can be information overload.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, the stuff, you know, things that come up that contradict And so, yeah, in my experience, the over-searching of the internet, I think what I got caught up in and what I see a lot of people getting caught up in is a common tendency for human beings is to seek outside of themselves for answers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And definitely even more with the internet.
Yeah, right. It makes it that much easier and that much more compelling to search outside, right?
Question, internet will solve it.
Yeah, just hit Google and you'll find out the truth, you know, or not. Yeah. You know,
it's important to think, though, that all those answers came from a person before it was online. I have to remind myself that.
Yeah.
Right, right, right. The internet is just a repository.
Yeah. There really is, like you were saying, there's really not any secrets anymore because it's just all so easily put out there to everyone. Really, the newer problem is, like, disinformation. Just there's so much information and filtering out the extras everywhere. And some of it's purposeful disinformation and some of it's just accidental. That's confusing too.
Nowadays, yeah. I've found it easier just to ask myself, like asking your inner voice. Like, for example, should I use this quartz crystal or this rose quartz crystal to help me with something or something or another? And then I find that the answer just comes to me if I'm quiet and I listen. And it's getting a lot easier nowadays. And I feel like if more people tried that, they would find themselves that it was also very easy. Just ask themselves and find the questions. I mean, find the answers to their questions within their own mind or their divine connection.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
That resonates with me. I mean, the one downside, or not the one downside, but one of the downsides that I see with all of this access to information and it all being external, right? I found myself, okay, well, how much more time can I spend on gathering up this information to get answers? And for a while, I eventually realized I was getting further away from, as you describe it, Amy, just that quiet place. That quiet place where the answers or information organically or internally or naturally comes to you, right? Insight, our own natural insight that we can derive from the void, from meditation, from our positive entities or guides or whatever you want to call it, but that quiet place, and it just seems that we're in a time now where I guess some people refer to it as the quickening, right? Everything is like ratcheting up and ramping up, and I tend to describe it as just loud. Everything's getting louder, too. Mm. You know, even down to political. You know, the liberals and the conservatives, the left and the right, and this the nationalists and the you know, it's just everyone is screaming at each other.
Yes.
You know, and it's tricky. Because I have even found myself getting caught up into it, and being compelled by, all right, I got the real story, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got the real story. You know, I've done the research. I don't follow discredited information sources and so on and so forth, and I'm really on top of it. I got the answer. And that's an ego trap.
Yes.
That's an ego trap. So, you know, I feel like I'm getting to the point where I'm getting pretty good at balancing all of this stuff out. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, I think it's okay to feel like you have the answers, but it's just not feeling like it's the only answer necessarily.
Right. Right.
But like I was saying before, there's different realities that we're all living in, and it's all subjective realities. And like you were saying, finding the inner insight within yourself, that's really about what type of questions we're asking. And based on our inner connection with ourselves, that's what questions we'll be asking. And if you lose touch with that, then you start asking questions that split off into other people's realities or other hierarchies, realities that they're creating for themselves.
Interesting.
That's not necessarily for you. Like you're saying, all the factions that get created where it's libertarian and Republican and Democratic, all those are alternate realities that have been created based on hierarchies. And that's not really our thing. We're not really affected by that. But we are if we start asking questions focused on that stuff. But it's good to get back to our inner voice and not get too much caught in the political area, because it's just a distraction in the end. It's not really doing anything.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you with that. You know, I think there is a balance to be had. Yes. I think there is an objective reality to some degree, but I would agree with you also that, you know, all of us as individuals and in our memes, if you will, or in our groups that we associate with, we start forming these subjective realities. And once again, you know, I think the human mind, I think we forget, or maybe have forgotten, how powerful our minds are, right? If we're thinking in a certain direction, if we've formulated certain opinions, taken a certain position, we're, you know, visualizing and concentrating on certain outcomes or certain information that we've been given, and we put energy into that, how much are we creating that? Right? It's like a chicken, it's like a chicken and egg thing almost. You know, how much are we creating by what we believe?
What we're focusing on.
Or what we're focused on. Exactly. And so, yeah, back to what you were saying about questions, like, yeah, if we're all looking for answers, but are we really asking the right questions? That's pretty pertinent, man.
Yeah, and you can see how, with search engines, how little tiny aspects of changing a question can actually change the full answer.
Right.
Just change a few words or even order placement, and that changes what you receive.
Right.
So that finding your inner aspect of yourself or the inner voice will help asking those right questions, because you'll just intuitively know.
Right.
Because we're actually always connected to a collective conscience, I feel, and we have some sort of filter of individuality for some reason, it seems like, but we can always access those group consciousness at any time. It's almost just like entering in a website, actually. You need to know the website or whatever it's called to access it. Even a password, I mean, it's just accessing something that's far away from you.
Finding the right password.
Finding the right password. Yeah, it's
passwords to them. Or it's interesting, like the radio.
Right. It's interesting what you say about like internet searches and stuff. And I've experienced that recently. Yeah, you put in some terms, and you'll get like maybe really a bunch of mainstream stuff, or if you will. Right, about that subject. I'm like, no, that's not what I'm looking for. right? I'm looking for, you know, looking for something over here. So then, yeah, you change the words around, or you switch them around a little bit, and then you get, you know, you get a whole different set of outputs. It's right. And it is the internet, in a way, the cyber world is. I think it's an artificial. I think the goal of it, on some level, particularly with this information gathering, right, of everyone on the planet who is accessing the web or searching on the web or putting their information out there, right? We know that the NSA and so forth, they're creating this giant database, and it's almost as if there's this alternate reality that's being created based off of the energy outputs of this reality, of the real reality, and it's as if there's this thing that's being created, this separate thing that's being created, where the energies and the thoughts and the intentions and the awareness of humanity is being like siphoned off into some other thing,
like categorized into this data smog.
Yeah, it's like an artificial astral plane, or like an artificial Akashic records or something.
Whoa. Yeah. Well, I bet you guys have heard, but the creator of Facebook is trying to create a way to type through thoughts. You can just think and your phone will type it for you.
Oh, yeah.
That's scary. That is really scary.
The fact that they're talking about it now means that technology will probably be commercially available within the next 5 years, maybe. But I think they've been doing it. I think that's old technology, actually, at this point.
Me too.
And it makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. You know, that you'd be able to... you know, the level of technology in terms of brain sensors and things like that, and we know that thoughts are definitely have their own frequencies. What they are, I couldn't say specifically, but thoughts are energy. Thoughts are forms, and they have frequencies. You know, I'm sure you've experienced telepathy before.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. If we can do it, that's the thing. It's same to the point of what I was saying. They're basically creating these artificial means to do things that we're inherently capable of, like the telephone, for example, right? I think the telephone was a mechanical, external, three-dimensional kind of material device that basically derived out of an inherent capability that we already had and maybe weren't using. How do we know? Who came up with the idea of the phone? Well, you know, I could call somebody, I can communicate with someone at great distances. Well, it seems to me that that idea was already there.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been doing that in India for a while, doing telepathic communications.
Yeah,
even
I think.
To, like, warn each other with battle.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing. Even stuff like, you know, telepathic communication. It's like this real freaky thing, right? Like this real crazy concept. No, I think it's actually, it's perfectly normal. I'm if you really pay attention, you'll probably notice all kinds of unintended telepathic communications every day in your life. How many times do you think of a friend and they call you? You know, how many times? I mean, it's just, it's always going on. It's always going on.
Yeah.
So I think we're getting to the point where, it's probably difficult for a lot of people to comprehend. It's like all the science fiction stuff, all the way out woo-woo stuff that was presented to us in a way over the past few decades as fiction is actually real.
Yeah. They presented it to you as fiction.
It was presented as fiction.
They were just preparing you thought-wise. Putting the thought into your brain.
Right. Now, yes. And the question now comes up for me is, okay, were certain entities working on all of this high-tech stuff in the background, you know, these people with very, very knowledgeable about the nature of reality and the human organism and so forth, and have they kind of been leading us on and saying, okay, well, if we put this idea out there, then maybe a generation later they'll be ready to accept this idea as normal and so forth, if enough of us have a certain idea in mind or a certain concept, if we're all exposed to a certain concept, then what's the likelihood that that concept will move closer to reality?
Mm.
Right? Just by the fact that a lot of us are thinking of the same thing.
Collectively manifesting.
Mm. I think that's going on. I think that's going on as well.
Yeah. I feel like they seed the thought or the idea into our brains on like a huge scale. And then it just gets sent out into that little thought matrix of the world. And then it's filtered through everybody. And it just strengthens and strengthens. And wow, that's amazing.
Right.
Like everything's virtual reality. Then that's completely necessary.
What'd you say, Michael?
Especially if everything's virtual reality, then it's completely necessary to have a mass majority of people thinking a certain idea before it can actually happen.
Yeah.
Or even if it's not virtual reality, it's still important to have gradual acceptance of the idea. Like with movies, actually. Movies are a really interesting thing. I find it very interesting how you can see movies doing things before the idea is actually accepted. Whether it's aliens, whether it's the alien stuff, or whether it's the going to the moon thing.
Right, space travel. Yeah.
A popular movie before the actual full acceptance of the idea.
Yeah, I definitely would agree. And actually,
Acceptance of aliens a lot.
Right.
And like they're cute and we can accept them now.
Right. And Jordan and I, we haven't gotten around to it yet, but we were discussing doing a show about just that, how certain concepts are of future potential, or you know, the nature of what's really going on in the world are actually revealed through fiction.
Mm. Through disclosure,
all kinds of forms of disclosure, in Hollywood in particular. Yeah.
Yeah, and that goes back to the idea that it's some form of consent from all of us is necessary, even if it's subconscious. So if we're consenting, agreeing to it, and accepting the idea, then we're also supporting it at the same time. And that's why it's necessary to reveal those things in some way.
Right. Yes, the bad
otherwise,
guys...
Otherwise, it wouldn't make sense why... It doesn't make sense to me otherwise.
Yes. From my understanding, the number one law of the universe is free will. So
I think so, too.
So even if... Yeah, so even if there's, you know, the bad guys out there, if you will, you know, even in the Bible, the devil always has to, like, kind of cajole people. He can't make people do stuff against them. He's got to get their, you know, that's the, you signed a deal with the devil, for example, right? No one can make you do anything. Even the most malevolent being in the universe can't get people to do shit without their consent in a way. Because that violates just the working laws of the universe. So even evil is operating according to, from my perspective, to some degree is operating according to the universal law.
Even the courts, the judicial especially.
Well, it makes it real too. I mean, if not everyone's supporting something, then it's not as strong.
I mean, right.
That's actually just like with the internet. You know, you need a server to support things, and the more servers you have supporting something, the more stable it is.
Right.
And each server is kind of like a person in this analogy.
Sure. And then, yeah, these memes, these thoughts, these social movements and what have you. You know, if enough people are resonating on a certain idea, it's going to have that much more momentum, and it's going to attract that many more people into it. You know?
Yeah.
Like global warming, for example.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, it seems to me. Oh, and then they changed it to climate change. Well, sure, the climate is always changing. The climate always has been changing. We live on a world in flux, and we know that much. But I mean, I have to say, one of my biggest...
You know, that's a huge change, Eklund, actually, global warming to climate change.
Right, because they realize, whoops, all our warming shit has been called out, so we got to call it something else. But basically what that leads me to, and I have, you know, I have discussions with, you know, the bane of my existence at this point in time, it seems to me, is that there are a lot of people who I know and who I love genuinely and respect, who are very intelligent people, but who, from my perspective, when it comes to certain subject matter, are utterly ignorant. And when I say ignorant, I mean like the real meaning, like ignorant. They are ignoring certain aspects of reality, and they glom on to just these memes. And I don't know, it's very disconcerting for me. I'm having a lot of interesting moments with a lot of people in my life who I'm just like, I love you, you're brilliant, you're beautiful, but you cannot see that you are stuck on this thing, and I don't really think you even believe it. It's because everybody else believes it and are fervent about it that you believe it. You know, consensual reality is really tricky.
Yeah.
You know, and
I mean,
like
people are easy to control.
I mean
that's why I think it's just because of duality and then false dichotomies. I mean, since duality exists in this, I guess, reality, and false dichotomies is an easy trap for people to fall into. You know, you just make two sides. And, you know, one of the sides is good and one's bad, and people are going to join one or the other. And if the stage has already been built and it's holding both those sides, then whoever owns the stage, it doesn't matter which side you choose, you're still playing on that person's stage.
Right, right, right.
And that's how you control people.
Right, and Jordan and I met through a group of people. I won't mention them now, but one of the real compelling things that I got from some of the time that we spent together with this group was that one of the main motivations for human beings and one of the main causes of problems for people and for society in general is that people have this overarching tendency to need to be right and look good.
Mm. Right? What are
they
two?
Being right,
be right and what?
And looking good. Meaning not looking bad. I don't mean like physically well-dressed or physically good-looking, but like looking.
No, you mean like fitting in, feel like you belong. Like
right.
You're not alone.
Right.
Isolated.
And so
you need to be a part of a group.
Exactly. And that's where this, you know, what you were describing is kind of this dualistic thinking and people just grabbing on to this stuff that, you're right, because, well, shit, everybody else is feeling like that's the reality and they feel real strongly about it. So I guess I should too. And I think it's about that, you know, naturally, if you really examine it, at least to me sometimes, even outside of modern day goings on, if you really think about it, you know, human existence could be pretty insecure, man. I mean, there's so many unknowns. There's so many questions that could come up, right, in that quiet space, for example, if you were to take the time. And so naturally, it makes sense to me that people would be grasping onto something that gives them a sense of certainty or surety about the nature of the world. And I think that's why it's very easy for people to grab onto certain concepts. And then, of course, the more and more people that grab onto these concepts, you create this, it's consent reality. And I'm not sure, that worries me a little bit. I'm a little standoffish with that kind of stuff. You know, even in the alternative world, right? Alternative media and alternative concepts in which we dwell and which we live. You know, I still tend to want to hold a central position. You know, okay, that sounds interesting. That sounds good. Sounds like makes sense to me in some respects. But I'm not just going to go all in right away. I'm going to look at it. I'm going to turn it over. I'm going to look around it. I'm going to look at this. I'm going to look at the sources. I'm going to look for the presenters, citations, motivations. And, you know, so regardless of what information is coming, where it's coming from, I'm like a classic skeptic.
Yeah.
I'm not a naysayer.
Interesting.
Say again?
The word alternative is interesting.
Right, in and of itself.
It represents that the majority or the main thing is separate from that, essentially.
Again, it's that it's the whole duality thing. And we see it.
Yeah. So if I say you have an alternative perspective, it's implying that my perspective is the main perspective.
Right, exactly.
But that's not necessarily true. That doesn't... How would I know that? How would I know what the mass majority feels?
Right.
But that's essentially how hierarchies work. You know, they make their voice loud, like you were saying, lots of loud voices earlier. by replicating their individual voice, I guess, through money.
Right, or through media, or various forms of amplification, yeah.
I mean, essentially, that is money. You can buy media through money.
Exact. Wow. You know what? I've been enjoying this so much. We're like slightly over time, man. So I got to wrap it up. Michael, thanks for calling
in.
Good
talking to you.
Real valuable insights, man. I really appreciate talking to you. Please, next time we're on, we have a call in. Love to hear from you again.
Amy, I would love to call you. It was fun.
Amy, thank you very much for helping me hold it down in Jordan's absence.
You're welcome, Corey.
He always a lovely viewpoint, and makes a lot of sense to me where you're coming from. So that'll do it, people. Thanks very much. Hopefully we're going to have Jordan back next week. And until next time, pierce the veil, and the truth will reveal itself.